Taxation number 21628, Real 2.
Fred Hawkins, Real 2.
From the time the West Africans were there, I don't think the mosquitoes plagued them a lot, but it seems we were on a malarial swamp, and it was some months before they could get any mepocrine, as they called it then, malarial tablets to us. By that time, a lot of the battalion had malaria and been in Wilberforce Hospital. Eventually, we got this mepocrine, and it was a NCO's duty to see that the people took it and missed a turn. It was the duty to make sure they did take this. It was like Darewood's Hall. A lot of people had sore throats down there, and we used to gargle with permanganate of potash, and the NCOs had to stand there while you gargled to make sure you'd done it. Eventually, we got this mepocrine, and I think it slowed up the disease or the complaint quite a bit. And our medical officer, he worked very, very hard to try and keep us all fit. There was a lot of battalion parades carried out there on the big parade ground. The CO and the RSM used to have us out there, but it was it got you to in the way of obeying orders and doing what you was told to do, and do it in the quickest, safest way you could do it. Leisure time. Our platoon commander, Lieutenant Jack Watt, he hired a boat and he took us up to an island. It was called Bunce Island. It's way up the harbour. And this was used a lot in the slave trade days. And walking about there, there were still the cannon barrels lying about there. And I've got photos of the platoon sitting on one, all bunched together. Also there, you could find pieces of timber and driven in the ground with some particular person in memory of Honourable Sea Captain so-and-so, these different names. This was all on this little island up there, Bunce Island. That was an interesting visit. We were on standby to carry out Operation Shrapnel. It never materialised, but it was to take over the Cape Verde Islands. It was unnecessary afterwards, so we were stood down. We were, I think it was 48 hours notice to go to Dakar. That was Operation Menace. But the guns were too much firing from land that they didn't make a landing there. But the idea was there was two battalions of Marines who were going ashore. This never materialised. So that all the convoy with the troops, they come back to harbour, and gradually they disperse to various areas. But at least one battalion of Marines stopped there. There we had an RE, Royal Engineer Company, there, and the Essex, and the one battalion of Marines.
How did you get on with them?
Big Panzer?
How did you get on with them?
Oh, they got on very well with them, really. with a sports boxing, and the entertainment was very, very good. With the different ships that were in the harbour, one ship in particular, the Dragon, was a, I think it was an 8-inch cruiser. She was in our convoy, she was an escort in our convoy, and she stayed in Freetown Harbour all the time we were there. And the last I heard of her, she was sunk as a block ship on D-Day. Somewhere as they come. But there was the Dragon, there was the Albatross, which was a seaplane tender, and there were, I think there were three walrus planes in the harbour. I've got photos of them at anchor. And the Edinburgh Castle, which was the depot ship, that was moored right up by King Tom, where the naval headquarters were. The other ship in the harbour was called the Vindictive. That was a cruise, First World War cruiser. The one of the chaps on board the Vindictive, we knew him down at Burnham and Crouch. Some of the chaps really knew him because he was. They were in the yachting business. A lot of the chaps were working for yachts, chandlers, and that sort of thing, boat yards, and they knew this particular person. On the boom defence vessel, because the boom went right across the harbour, and that was only opened up to let ships go in and out again, but. The chap from there come from Burnham on Crouch as well, because we went down and had tea with him on the tug there one day. The interesting thing about the Dragon, the party of us were given permission to go on board the Dragon, and they were to see how the naval association or naval people worked. And when we got outside the boom defence, so we was in the Atlantic there then a tug brought out a target. And the vivid imagination I've got of the target is like the scaffold poles standing up. I tried to explain, but that's the nearest I could get to the description of this target. Now, the Dragon towed this target out to sea, and one of the naval officers said, there's going to be some target practice take place. You've got to, if you look round, you'll see where the foreigner's coming from. And you're looking all over the ocean, as you might say, but then we saw some puffs of smoke in the distance, and the next minute the shells come over on the target, you know. But that was close enough for me, sort of thing. They were well away, but to hear these shells come and whine, and that was the sound you didn't forget. But it was the cruiser Birmingham and the Mauritius. They were the two cruisers what was doing the firing, the practice work. This carried on in the afternoon. And then it seemed as though there was a U-boat scare. And we had an idea we were going to chase a U-boat, I suppose. But this didn't materialise because a tug came out and we had to get from the Dragon down the scramble net into the tug. And when it was like this, and sometimes the tug would be up here, and the next minute, just as she was going to get off, and it dropped down. We got ashore, and I got aboard this tug, and got ashore all right. but that was an experience. We'd done some invasion training there. I think they used the whalers of the ship's whalers. We went out to Evans Sea, and then we come ashore with a kapok roll, and a kapok roll was your ordinary rubber ground sheet with a bundle of hay in, rolled up tightly, and you held it under your, rolled up under your left arm, and you had your equipment undone, and so if anything happened, you was, in theory, you just let your arms go, let your equipment go, and keep afloat. But fortunately, we never had to put that into that was only in practice. That never come to any authentic invasion, right? It's like invasion of anywhere. But it was an experience to do this. All the time we were wondering where we were going to finish up and what we were doing all these different things for. Rumours, you would all get rumours all the time, but they fizzled out. There was no end to them, as you might say. But the training was pretty hard because of the conditions you were training under, the heat, and being in the bush where it didn't seem to be any air come to you at all. It was all stuffy and muggy all the time. We had shorts and a shirt, Angora shirt, and these ordinary trousers, the shorts, but they turned to be called Bombay bloomers because they were shorts to here. And then there was a bit turned up, and it had a button in here and a button there. Well, when the theory was at night time, was to undo those buttons, let this come down, and tuck it inside your gaiters, or in your socks, to stop the mosquitoes biting you. That was the idea of them. We used to call them Bombay bloomers. There was an order come out to make sure your shirt sleeves were down after sunset, I think, or at sunset. Mosquito nets, when we were issued with them, they had to be put down at sunset. Used to get them, hang them from the ceiling and come down and tuck them under the blankets. And then you sort of got in and tucked under again, so you was inside a net to sleep, so you didn't get bitten by mosquitoes, another sort of precaution. I don't think there's much else I can tell you about Freetown, really. We done a guard down at King Tom. King Tom was the naval depot there, and we had a Bren gun on a tripod for ACAC defence. That was a job that was, or a duty that was carried out daily.
Did the enemy ever attack Freetown?
Later on, just before we left Freetown, a plane come over, and I don't think there was any bombs or dropped, but the plane come over, and several ships in the harbour did open up. Far at it. I can't tell you, remember all the names of the ships, really, not offhand, that were in our convoy when we went to Freetown. The Orion, Strathaden, Strathaird, Empress of Australia, Empress of Canada, I think, Empress of Britain, one or two more, but I can't remember offhand not all the names of the ships.
How did you get on with the local people?
Well, pretty good, really. I suppose, like in Egypt, if they could do you for a copper, they would. But that, I think that was we got used to that. No, well, I think we got on very well with them, really, and it was interesting to be there. Because we were carrying ammunition boxes with 12 Bren gun magazines in when we went on exercises, it was quite a heavy thing to carry. And they decided they would like some porters. So there was a party of NCOs and one or two officers. They went up on the narrow gauge railway right up into the bush, and they called at the different villages and met the headman and explained what they were after. They wanted young, strong, healthy males, about 17, 18, 19, something about that age, I should say. And they carried on until they got the required number, quite a few anyway, and they brought them all back to Freetown. They put them in a camp, which was on the opposite side of the road, I think, to where our guard room was, to where our barracks were. They were the other side of the road. They issued them with a pair of shorts and a singlet. They tried to drum a little sense into them as far as orders were concerned. It was found that difficult, but eventually they done what you wanted. Well, then, when you've gone on exercise, there'd been an NCO, there'd be so many of these lads come over to the battalion daily, and you used to go and collect so many for your platoon, or for the company, and then you had so many per platoon, and it was their job to carry our heavy equipment. They used to be behind us when we was trailing through the bush, and an NCO used to be behind the last one to make sure nobody dropped anything or scarpered with whatever he was supposed to be carrying. They were very noisy. I think that was due to the fact they used to drink a lot of this palm oil over there. But they were very pleased to think they got a pair of shorts and a singlet to wear. And eventually, I think the hospital had some of these chaps as well. They may have been kitted out a bit better than what ours were, but I don't know. But I did hear that the hospital lads were kitted. They were up there doing their orderly work and that sort of thing. They were kitted out a bit better than what our chaps were. But they done what you wanted them to do. And the only thing was, there was a terrific. We used to perspire, so did they. But I know who I'd rather be walking behind. The smell was terrible. We stopped there until June.
June 41.
Yes, we had the Christmas there in. With a bottle of beer, I think it was Stella beer. We had one of B Company chaps died while we was at Freetown. I'm not sure quite what his complaint was, but he passed away. A chap by the name of Stan Saunders, he lived at Burnham, and he's buried in King Tom Cemetery. As far as I know, there was only one cemetery there at the time. Now there's four. We left there on a ship called the Bergensfjord, Norwegian vessel. The rumour of we were coming home, but the following morning I said, well, if we're going home, we're going the wrong way, because the sun was on the wrong side of the ship, in my estimation, for us to be coming home. So they thought we'd be going to India again, and then the Far East. But we finished up down at Durban on the Bergensfjord. We pulled in there on the 7th of July, 41. And we disembarked off the Bergensfjord, and immediately embarked on the Ile de France, a huge liner with a good speed, on the 11th of July. During those 4 days, we were allowed shore leave, and my pal Chrissy, who was from the Tillingham area, but he was in our company, him and I were kept together. And as immediately you got out into the harbour on the quayside, the South Africans, they just come and picked you up and took you. Their hospitality, it's terrific, really. A gentleman came in his car, and he picked Chrissy Smith and myself up, and he took us up to his bungalow, where he'd got a black boy working for him, and he gave us a meal. Then he took us to the race course, and we went back there and had another meal before he took us back to the dockside. A wonderful hospitality there, and a lot of our chaps, long time after we was in the desert, they were still getting comforts and letters from these South African people who they'd befriended, or who had befriended them. As it was wonderful, the hospitality they showed there. We left on the 11th of July on the Ile de France. That was a fast liner, and she used to run from Durban up to the Red Sea. That was her journey, backwards and forwards. Like a shuttle service, and the reason they done that, they were within range of enemy planes, but she was fast, and I forget how many there were, but all the battalion's Bren guns were mounted beside the ship's AK-AK. All the guns were mounted for anti-aircraft defence. About 2 days out from Durban, another chap from B Company, he died, and he was buried at sea. that's the first time, first and only time we've seen a funeral carried out. The ceremony carrying out at sea. The chap I spoke to you about down in Devon Bay, he was on the firing party. He had a Sergeant Haynes, he was an old soldier, and he was the only one who'd been on a firing party before. It was something you never rehearsed, because you never rehearsed one of him. But the rumour was, if you saw sharks following the ship, there was always a death on board. Whether this was a Matt Lowe's tale, I don't know, but there were sharks there, and no sooner had this body hit the water than it was gone. They put that on the board and in a canvas hold all, and have the Union Jack over the top, and then just let it slide off. But that was about 2 days out from from Durban when that happened, about 600 miles, I suppose. Read about that. My estimation was about 600 miles, I think. That pulled into, they call it Rafti Roads. It's up the end of the Red Sea. And we anchored there. And there was two or three more ships at anchor there. One was the Queen Mary, the Aquitania, the only four-funnel ship in being. They got New Zealand troops and Australian troops on. And we were short of cigarettes. We set across the boat went across to one of these liners there, and they come back loaded with the cigarettes for they distributed to us on board. When we got to Port Tewfik, we had a casualty there. The holds were being unloaded. All their gear was being lifted out of the holds, and one of the block and tank was broke and crushed one of the chaps' heads. He'd gone to look over the hold, I think he shouldn't have done. But there was a certain number of people who were given duties to keep people away from the hold while this operation was in progress.
So he was one of the soldiers?
One got killed up there. This was in... We went across to from Egypt. We was to Hag, El Tahag camp, I think it was called. Can you